Hello, good afternoon, good evening, everyone. My name is Halima. I'm going to be moderating this session. So welcome, everybody. Today, we're going to be discussing how food labeling influences consumer behavior, and we'll be exploring the role of nutrition labels in shaping consumer behavior, influencing food reformulation, and improving public health outcomes. So for this discussion today, we have a very special guest, Lauren Swan. Lauren Swan, MS, RD, LDN, is a registered and licensed dietitian and a B2B consultant specializing in marketing communication strategies and labeling regulations compliance advisory, seasoned with a passion for cultural food waste perspective to effectively deliver accurate nutrition messages where food policy, consumer trends, and public health meet, intersect, or collide. She has managed corporate regulatory affairs at Fortune 500 food companies, advised hundreds of companies ranging from micro startups and regional manufacturers to established brand leaders worldwide, and worked with community and national advocacy organizations. Lauren loves to help folks figure out the facts about food so they can decide what's good to eat. She's also a published writer in the industry and popular press, has appeared on local and national media, delivered public speaking presentations at annual conferences, developed online continuing education and training webinars, guest lectured at major universities, and served on professional organization boards, executive committees, and task forces. Lauren initiated and moderated LinkedIn's largest food labeling and advertising and cultural food waste groups. She holds a Bachelor's of Science in Medical Dietetics from Howard University and a Master of Science in Nutrition Communications from Boston University. So hi, Ms. Lauren. Good evening. It's very nice to have you here.
Hello. It's nice to have you here, to be here. Thank you for asking me.
And thank you for coming on board. So we're just going to go straight into it. So what challenges do you think consumers face in understanding and using food labels effectively?
Okay. When I was kind of researching this, I have a PowerPoint. Is it okay to put it up?
Yes, of course.
Okay, let's do that. Having it a little tricky finding it. It's open on my desk.
That's okay.
Okay, can you see that?
Yes, you can.
Yes, and what I did is the questions that you had sent initially, I made sure they were all addressed. So if I cover one and then you want to ask again, ask the next one, that's fine too. When I took a look at the research, and there is a lot of research about front of pack labeling and the influences. And I always try to get the most recent because, as many of you know, I do run a food labeling group on LinkedIn, and I'm constantly posting articles that have just come out. And there's been a lot of published research about front of pack labeling and nutrition labeling in the past couple years. So one of the first ones that came up happened to be about African regions and the main barriers to consumer use of nutrition labels. And what they identified in that one was time constraints, small font size, difficulty in understanding, and unfamiliar language. And this is actually very consistent with what else we'll see as we go through the questions and the research that I found that's applicable. It's sort of reinforced by another literature review that said numerical formats can lack specific guidance. So we need clear labeling formats. And this, one of the nice things about looking into this was I saw a lot of consistency in the findings from articles published by different researchers in different journals and in different countries in the world. So clear labeling formats are really important. And then another one I came across said readability and comprehensibility of the food nutrition labels is crucial, along with taking into consideration the cultural background, economic development, consumer health awareness, regulatory policies, food market competitiveness, and a limited education level and weak ability to interpret was also an issue. And the economic conditions today, consumers are focusing a lot more on food prices than nutritional value. So they're looking at whether or not they can afford it. And they're also questioning when they look at higher priced products that look like they have more nutrients, whether or not that's actually valid. So they're not necessarily willing to put out extra money for healthier products unless they're confident that that's what they're getting. So these are some of the challenges consumers are facing. And my, as a registered dietitian who has also worked in traditional healthcare, I can say that one of the biggest things I've noticed, because I network heavily with other colleagues, is how do they apply it in a way that is significant and important for them? Because we are all individuals. And one of the first steps in knowing what information on a nutrition label is most important to you, what to look for, what values to look, whether you want something higher or lower in a certain nutrient, is to find out your own individual needs. So in my opinion, that's step number one. Individuals who are buying food products should get a good understanding for, you know, what they do or do not need in a food product for their health. And I also recognize that there can be a time, often early in adulthood, that you don't have to concern yourself that much with what you're eating. At least you don't, might not see the effects of it right away. But we do have public health dietary guidelines. And my perspective is a little bit more from the U.S. FDA, although I do, as you see in my labeling group, I do post research and news from other countries. But I do know that we have dietary guidelines that are part of the basis for our food labeling and nutrition policies. So I can move on to. Okay. Was this your next question? Okay, good. Yeah, I tried to go right in the order you gave them. So the front of pack label influence, this is traffic light labeling on consumer purchasing decisions, need to be simplified and easy to understand. Two that are cited, Nutri-Score and traffic light labeling, are likely to be effective for all socioeconomic groups. So that's also a good finding, because we know that we do see some differences in the ability to understand the information on the label and apply it. Front of pack labeling had a stronger influence than nutrition claims. And so the front label is key. It's not just about picking it up and turning to the label on the side where the nutrition facts is. Again, this is a U.S. FDA orientation, or even the back panel if there isn't enough room on the side. So front of pack labeling, consistently, I saw this in all the studies, appears to be far more influential in getting the consumer's attention than label it nutrition facts on the back panel. And it also appears to be more significant and in terms of effectiveness than nutrient content claims or health claims. So front of pack labeling, this is the reason why it's front and center these days. Nutri-Score and traffic lights were effective, and there's also literature supports that the warning symbols are effective too, but the traffic lights and health star rating systems were effective. And this bottom one is European, so we're finding that the findings of whether or not front of pack labeling is effective, we do find the same results in different countries, but it looks like what we need to be specific about are some of the cultural differences that could affect the way that information is presented. So how do they compare in effectiveness? The Health Star rating and Nutri-Score systems are very promising. However, a lot of studies showed that the warning labels make them even more effective. Warning labels and traffic light. So we have the Nutri-Score, the warning labels, and the multiple traffic lights, and the Health Star rating system. And they are all proving to be effective. Okay, do I believe labeling policy should be volunteer? No, I do not. So how have manufacturers responded to mandatory versus voluntary labeling policies? Overall, the nutrients or the parts of food that were supposed to be limiting or restricting, those decreases were seen. And you might be aware that Chile is kind of, the country of Chile is sort of leading the pack here with findings and with rolling out these new systems. It can also facilitate implementation of other policies and regulations, such as restricting certain nutrient content claims or health claims if you have a warning on the front label. So Chile, Peru, and Mexico are leveraging their front of package systems in this way to inform marketing regulations for children. And that's another area that is showing to have a lot of findings that are, there's a lot of agreement on these findings that we really need to work on policies regarding marketing to children. Most manufacturers will only display it if there's value in the voluntary system. And there's a concern about this. This is the Health Star rating, because if you have some companies using it because it's voluntary and other companies not using it, the consumer can't make a comparison. And I also want to point out that there might be variation from country to country, but there are usually basic labeling mandates that you have to have on the label. Let's keep in mind that claims are optional. Nutrient content claims and health or disease prevention claims are optional. So it's important to recognize that if a front of pack labeling system is put into place, there may be differences in the marketplace, which will ultimately affect consumer choices if it is voluntary. So even like with U.S. labeling regulations, claims are voluntary, but if you make the claim, it is subject to regulations. There are some claims that don't have hard and fast regulations like use of the term natural. There's a general policy statement. But for nutrient content claims, health or disease prevention claims, or using the word healthy in the U.S., if they choose to use it, it is subject to regulations, but they are not required to use it like they are required the minimum information, the product name, the net weight, the ingredient list, and the company name and address. And interestingly enough, in the U.S., companies can exempt out of nutrition facts labeling if they're small. They have to file with the government, and they usually don't do it because they want to look like the big guys. And there are often retailers, brokers, and distributors that will not carry the product regardless of company size unless it has a nutrition labeling on there. So I think the most important thing to remember about a front of pack labeling system or a warning system is the literature, the studies are showing us that unless it's mandatory, you won't see enough of it in the marketplace for consumers to use it to make comparisons and to make healthier choices. Now, getting specifically into children, the World Health Organization recommends stronger policies to protect children. And I know in the U.S., the National Advertising Division, Better Business Bureau, has implemented some policies, some guidelines that they encourage manufacturers to work by, especially with children. And policies to restrict food marketing are shown to be most effective if they are mandatory, if they protect children of all ages. And some of this research does go into like pre-adolescent versus adolescent and teens. We know that a lot of the purchasing, often the parents control it, but they're sometimes influenced by what their children want. And as children get older and have their own pocket money, they might be purchasing things on their own. A government-led nutrient profile model to classify the foods that need to be restricted. To minimize the risk of mitigation of marketing to others, age groups, other spaces within the same medium, and other media, including digital spaces. So with branded marketing for kids, you might have it showing up in apps or computer games or online sites. So it can end up being a little bit more, spreading a little bit more for influence differently than it does for adults. So we need to also think about, are we trying to make these foods appealing through toys, advertising, songs, celebrities, cartoons, animated characters, things of that nature can be very appealing to children. I know many years ago, I saw a major morning TV broadcaster, her name was Hoda Kotb, on the Today Show. She did something called the picking game, and she had 3 and 4 year olds, and she would put in front of them a frosted cupcake and a banana. And wherever the logo was, she was using Spider-Man as a logo. If Spider-Man was on the frosted cupcake, they wanted that. If Spider-Man was on the banana, they wanted that. Even if the frosted cupcake was offered plain, they wanted whatever the Spider-Man logo was on. So if it was on a piece of fruit, they wanted the fruit over the cupcake. She also put the Spider-Man logo on a rock, and the children preferred the rock over a frosted cupcake that was plain and did not have a Spider-Man logo. So we've studied and we've known for a while just how influential animated cartoon characters and other associated TV shows, movies, you know, things that appeal to children can be used to market food. And hopefully we can also work on ways to market healthy food towards them too. But there's also the World Health Organization guideline on policies to protect children from harmful impact. All right. How can policymakers encourage compliance from food manufacturers, especially in low and middle income countries? And this is a completely me sort of ad-libbing here. The proposed rules, regulations, and policies, whether they're new or revised, we should encourage commentary and feedback before finalizing. And in the U.S., we currently have that in place, and we'll see what happens in the future because it has been questioned by the new administration. But commenting is an excellent way for all the stakeholders to get involved, to submit their comments. And that does not mean that the government is going to follow all the comments. But I know here in the U.S., FDA is legally required to review every single comment that comes in. And it's easy to go to the website with the proposed regulations and comment online, and it can be done anonymously. And I know this is a very important step, and I hope our government continues with it, because I have sometimes been hired by trade associations or companies to draft their comments. And their comments sometimes include statistics and charts and things of that nature. So this is a really important step, and it's important that anyone can do it. A company can submit, an individual consumer, an advocate, whoever can submit comments. And they will be considered. And often when the final regulation publishes, FDA in the preamble will also publish summaries of some of the comments and why they decided to go with or against those particular comments. So that's a really, really important part of the rulemaking process here in the U.S. The announcement should be publicized in professional industry, trade, and consumer online news and platforms. We all know that's kind of easy today, but, you know, keep your eyes peeled. When I do try to post in my labeling group when these different proposals and Federal Register updates come out. But I have heard people talk about how after the rule is finalized, why I didn't know about it, and I don't agree with it. So that's important for it to be, shared and make sure that people get it. Make the dates clear for the close of the comment periods. Announce final rules and regulations with dates for implementing, addressing the product currently packaged and labeled in distribution or commerce and manufacturing and or labeling after the final rule publishes. So companies need to know, if I have this product in my warehouse and it hasn't shipped yet, can it ship after the final rule? And there were distinctions there when trans fat labeling and the allergen labeling went into effect the same date. There were distinctions between when it goes into distribution versus when it's manufactured and labeled. So it is important to pay attention to these details. And we need support from industry, trade associations, and groups for understanding and implementing the newer revised rules through online articles, trainings, and webinars. We also need governments to enforce these rules. And I know that is challenging because a lot of governments don't always have the manpower. Sometimes they actually sort of on the QT, they're kind of happy when competitors sue or when advocacy groups, you know, bring something to the surface about a label, because they don't always have the manpower to go after all of them. But FDA does have warning letters that you can search to see what they have, how they've approached a company over a claim and whether or not it's misbranding the product. Food labeling definitely drives product reformulation. I know this, having worked for two major manufacturers, and I can tell you the moment that a new regulation or rule hits the streets, the product developers are in those labs looking at reformulating these products or coming out with new products. So it definitely influences them without question. Sometimes they just look at the product the way it is and see if it fits in. Years ago, when low carb was raging, which isn't even a claim, a nutrient content claim you can make on the label, but some companies looked at their product lines and just redesigned the packaging because the product already fit in with the type of low-carb lifestyle that consumers were pursuing at the time. So reformulating with the Health Star rating has already shown that they will go after it. So we also have, along with my anecdotal experience at companies, and I know anyone else who's probably worked for a major manufacturer has experienced the same, but we do have studies that show that labeling and regulatory policies can definitely drive reformulation for healthier foods. Do I see digital food labeling playing a larger role in consumer education? Absolutely. Remember that when most labeling regulations in most countries, and again, this is me from the U.S. and FDA, so I know other countries may have already addressed this, but our label regulations talk about the package, the physical package, and where the required elements have to appear to be in compliance with regulations. So when we go to a website or a web page, there's a whole lot more room for fanciful description. There's a whole lot more room for claims that might look innocent, but within the context of a branded product label page, they're a claim. So we do need to revisit this. FDA has been working on that. Consumer feedback reveals that consumers who have issues, health issues like gluten-free or allergens, they don't want to hunt for that information. And it annoys them that the puffery, like all natural or pure or wholesome, is the first thing they see on the landing page. And then they have to go hunt for things like gluten-free or allergens, which are much more meaningful and important to them. So that's where some of these were going. And they're sort of in process now. They haven't been completed or finalized, but they have been explored, and there have been Federal Register announcements about them. Remember, anything, if you put a QR code on a package, whatever it links to, that page is subject to the same labeling regulations as if it was on the page. And a note about AI, if you don't work regularly in food labeling compliance, be careful with some of the AI. For example, with Google, I have Googled some questions and the answer is spot on, and I will change one little tiny word in that question and Google it again and the answer is completely wrong. So be careful. I know they're still perfecting it. Some of it is good, some of it isn't. You might want to double check until we're certain that it is telling us what we need to know. These are some of the policy or industry shifts that research has cited we need to make food labeling even more effective in driving healthier outcomes. Health information, communication strategies for benefits awareness, fiscal measures increasing the price of unhealthy foods or reducing the cost of healthy foods. Especially now, I know a lot of the world is still dealing with the pandemic increase in prices because of the supply chain disruption. And then afterwards, those prices never really went back down. They didn't keep going up, but they didn't. But this is really important that there's research and studies showing that no matter what's on the food label, it comes down to price. Regulatory measures that restrict the marketing of unhealthy foods to children and mandatory food labeling. The designs need to be selected based on country-specific evidence of effectiveness and appropriateness. And that's really important, that we need to make sure that the designs and the presentation of front and pack information is specific to what is what's culturally familiar in that particular country. And this particular global overview of government endorsed nutrition labeling policies, they stressed that you want to avoid the nuance of industry initiated misguidance and their interference. My experience has been that we need to engage all of our stakeholders, but we do need to be careful about the profit motive, because that's not what this is about. Okay, the future of food labeling in low and middle income countries. And this was an interesting one because not all countries that have studied front and pack labeling are considered low and middle income. But we need incentives and we need to encourage interest. Establishing broad-based dialogues, creating institutional coordination beyond just food and health, redesigning the governance, reallocating tax revenues, increasing application of innovative technologies such as biofortification. This is an interesting one. Biofortification might get us out of the current controversy about ultra-processed foods, because the way we traditionally fortify foods, it will put them in that ultra-processed category. But fortified foods have become a part of our marketplace and our bodies. You know, we've almost become to depend on things like enriched grain products. So investment in infrastructure, empowering marginalized groups through education. An educational component for any front of pack labeling initiatives was cited in just about every article I read. So that's really, really important, some sort of consumer education component. And establishing standards for fortification, labeling, and marketing. Now, this is kind of a lengthy one. This is from Codex. And this was a little bit critical of Codex, but this is how we get better. So again, they're focusing on the conflicts of interest from the commercial standpoint and play more of a proactive role in sustainable food systems with this agenda. But we want to make sure that the public health interests aren't outweighed by the profit motive in industry. And we want to especially pay attention to the needs of lower income countries. And then I did find this, that the need to replicate Chile's front of pack labeling in India. And this is the Center for Science and Public Interest. This was their comments on the World Health Organization. They're a very visible and well-known consumer advocacy group in the United States. And they want the guideline to recommend mandatory front and pack label policies. and specifically recommend the nutrient warning labels because they do tend to have an effect. Only present positive information in the absence of nutrient warning levels. And this is something else that came out in different studies. You wouldn't have a claim like high fiber if you have a warning on there about the high sodium, because that can be confusing to consumers. More detailed guidance on label design, and that gets into what's in the individual countries, what might be more effective or might be more relatable. And no nutrition or health claims on products with nutrient warning labels. Acknowledge the need for ingredient lists, nutrient declarations, and front of pack labeling on the physical food package and at the point of selection for online retailing and purchase. So this is another review of the influence of nutrition on front of pack nutrition labeling on consumer. A well-designed labeling system encourages the purchases of healthier food and reduces purchases of unhealthy. Front of pack labels can encourage positive industry reformulation. Having an effective labeling system depends on a design that people can understand and use. A single traffic light summary label is likely more effective. NutriScore and health rating systems, the literature has positive evaluations of them, and they think the warning messages would help. So the Chilean stop sign symbol has proven to be effective. And this A front of package labeling system can facilitate the implementation of other policies. Marketing restrictions can prohibit manufacturers from being able to make nutrient content or health claims on the packaging and include child-targeted marketing on foods that are labeled as high in certain nutrients. And then this is the front of pack labeling from UNICEF, and the link is there. You can take a look online. It also has a section on how advocates can support government efforts. And this is sort of their schematic on how front of pack policy nutrition labeling works. Okay, that's all I have for you today. Are there any questions?
Thank you so much, Lauren. I thought that's extremely enlightening. Please, for the audience, you can drop any questions you have in the Q&A box. But I would say that some things that really stood out to me were the sections on marketing, especially targeted towards children. So that caught these experiments very eye-opening. I would have to look more into that. And I like when you spoke on the mandatory versus voluntary requirements, like seeing how the brands would act when these guidelines are mandatory versus when they are voluntary, I think is very eye-opening. And the part on policymakers leaving room for us, the public, the advocacy groups, to give commentary and food and feedback before making their decisions or passing any bills, I think that's highly important as well. So does anyone have any questions for Lauren, please? Anybody? You can drop your questions either in the chat or in the Q&A box. I don't see any questions yet. That means your presentation was so clear that everyone is completely on board with everything you had to say. Okay, so even if it's not a question, comments, suggestions, add to the call. Okay, yeah, we have a question here from Denise Robles. She says, hello, Lauren, my pleasure. First, thanks for still sharing all your knowledge on this matter. What will the recommendation from you to enforce labeling advocacy on health professionals?
Well, I guess one of the best ways to enter that is to really drive home the point that when consumers make a choice, that's what they're going to bring into their home and eat, or with menu labeling, the choice they make in a restaurant. So it's critical to know what you're purchasing and plan to eat. The thing about health professionals in general is we know that nutritionists, credentialed nutritionists and registered licensed dietitians are the experts to help advise. But we also know that among health practitioners, doctors and nurses and others sometimes step up because it's appropriate in whatever they're doing. But I do believe that licensed and credentialed nutritionists and dietitians are probably the best ones to interpret a label again in terms of the specific needs of a client or patient. So that's what I would stress, that this is where the selection is made. And if they understand it better, they can make the right choices. And then from there, that's what they have in their home for meal prep or with menu labeling, the calorie labeling, or requesting the nutrient breakdown of a meal.
Okay, thank you, Denise. I hope that has answered your question. I have a question now. I would like to know, in addition to the food labeling that's on the physical product, what else do you think can help consumers to make better choices? I know when we're speaking on the marketing towards children, we spoke about celebrity endorsements and advertising with jingles and songs. So what else do you think could go alongside front of pack labeling to positively influence consumer behavior?
Some people believe that the warnings, like the tobacco warnings, might be helpful. I know this is a huge challenge in this, putting this whole puzzle together and trying to get it complete, because something else that I observed when I worked on staff at food companies, product developers would often very carefully develop a product with the ingredients and nutrient profile that was appealing to consumers based on marketing research, as well as fit in with whatever dietary guidelines at the time. And they would test it in sensory to make sure it was appealing, and they roll it out into test market and it doesn't do well. See, one thing about consumers will sometimes sit in focus groups and research groups, and they'll speak of all the right things that they know they should do. But there are actually marketing research firms who, in the grassroots, will take a look at what happens when these same consumers go into grocery stores, and that's not what they're buying. So sometimes it is lip service. And I must say, this is something we cannot blame this on companies. Companies are only going to sell what buys. If a product isn't purchased and the sales go flat, they will discontinue it. Now, they do go into all kinds of advertising and promotion to get consumers to buy something. But the bottom line is, if the sales are not healthy enough for their profit margin, it will be discontinued. And sadly, in the past 40 years, I have seen a lot of well-planned, healthy products hit the market and they are discontinued. So there is a difference between what consumers absorb, the information they absorb, and them actually putting that into practice with their choices. I know some advocates believe we should start banning and prohibiting foods that are excess in ingredients and nutrients that we don't need, foods that are excess in salt and sugar and so forth. So I guess that's another possibility. If we can't just serve them up good, healthy foods with all the information they need, and they're still going for the less healthy products. It's a challenge. It's an ongoing challenge.
All right. Thank you. We have another question here from Saliha Faisal. To say, does the type of education affect knowledge and understanding of food labels, such as medical versus non-medical students or individuals belonging to those groups?
Yeah, the education that was being mentioned in the studies I saw was primarily consumer education, like general public health education campaigns. I know when FDA rolled out the NLEA almost 35 years ago, they ran out of money, because I was invited to bid on a publicity project that would involve education, with the commissioner going into grocery stores and getting local TV stations. And they just didn't have enough money to do it in all the places they wanted. They decided that where I was in Philadelphia, they were not going to send the commissioner there because it's in between DC and New York and they feel like that's saturated. So they sent him out to Pittsburgh. But that's just one small example. The education for professionals would probably be a little bit more technical or complicated, so they can really understand everything that's going on behind the scenes with the label, where the education that we roll out to consumers, we want that to be more straightforward, and we want it to just be about the packages they're more likely to pick up and take a look at. So it's really about understanding the different parts of a label. I have heard health professionals sometimes roll the nutrition facts label and the ingredient list all in one. Those are two separate parts of the label in terms of regulations that address them. And something else that can be confusing, and I'm not always sure if health professionals sort of tease this one out, but we often conflate claims about ingredients or additives in a product, like natural or organic, with it being healthy in terms of nutrients. And we don't necessarily have studies that always back that up. There are some studies about organic vegetables and fruits that might be richer in nutrients than their conventional counterparts because of the pesticides and the growing process. But there is a big difference between toxicology, like synthetic colors that might cause, you know, might increase your cancer risk. That's not exactly the same as a product that's high in fat, salt, and sugar. And that's something health professionals should take a closer look at and make sure you know what you're advocating for, because it's possible to, I saw a restaurant menu once with all these claims about wholesome and pure and nutritious, and I'm sure they could probably back all that up, but the meals were loaded with fat, sodium, and sugar. So they were all natural and wholesome and no additives, but they were very high in fat, calories, and sugar. So that's an important one, I think, for health professionals when we look at food labels. Pay attention to what you're honing in on and what advice you're giving. Is it about the nutrients in the food, or is it about other additives in the food that can compromise our health in other ways?
All right. Thank you for that. And we have what I believe is our last question for the day. How do we educate professionals in terms of not only focusing on calorie counting, but also the quality of ingredients and nutrients?
Yeah, that's an organization can give a webinar, like an organization of health professionals can give a webinar that goes into these more for a health professional audience. And the organization of it would have these things in distinct units. So you have your nutrition facts, you have your ingredient list. In terms of not focusing on calorie counting, but quality of ingredients and nutrients, again, that could go relate to an individual person's needs. But I think it is important to look at that ingredient list and recognize the ingredient list doesn't tell you what nutrients are in that food, just like the nutrition facts panel does not tell you what ingredients are in that food. So they're two different entities. And if someone is trying to only eat all natural, they might be honing in more on the ingredient list to make sure they're not getting additives, but that's not going to tell them the nutrient content. So we do need to keep those, recognize how those two things are separate. They also work together in some ways because, for example, if you have a claim on a product that it's fat-free and then you see something like oil in the ingredient list, they have to put an asterisk that says contributes an insignificant amount of fat or something to that effect. The same thing with sugar. So that the two can relate to each other too.
All right. Thank you very much, Lauren, for sharing your time and your knowledge with us today. I learned a lot, and I hope that everyone else did too. It's been a really wonderful time with you today, so thank you so much.
You're welcome. It's been a pleasure. I wish everyone good luck with whatever you need to do with this information, and you're all welcome. If you're not always already in it, you're welcome to join my food labeling group on LinkedIn, where I continue to share this type of information, and you can contribute food labeling information as well.
All right. Thank you so much.
Okay.
Bye, Lauren. Bye, everyone.
Okay. Bye.
Bye.